MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday morning, January 7th, 2024. It is the Beating the Book podcast, our final megapod of the year. Can't believe we've gotten here. Super Bowl 58, Super Bowl megapod. I think I said Super Bowl twice. It is your Super Bowl 58 megapod. You get the idea. It's Gil Alexander, and it is the usual cast of characters, not just for the year, but also for our Super Bowl megapod. This is kind of his slot. He's been kind enough to join us through the years. First of all, our regulars from his mom's cork attic, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the great Todd Wishnev. How you doing, Toddy?
Hey, Gilly. Hey, Gilly.
You look pretty good, man. You get your hair cut. You got your beard going, your mustache.
I didn't get my hair cut.
Oh, okay. Home debt. You showered? Can we go that far?
Showering. All right. I mix in a shower every once in a while.
Todd's like, I showered for this? And then the host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast, Will Hill, everybody. How you doing, Will? How you loving the podcast, man? You enjoy doing it?
It's good. Yeah, it's been fun. It's good. It's hard to believe we're here at the end of football season. We start this off in what, first few days of September, and then before you know it, middle of February. It just comes and it goes really quickly.
It's incredible. It is a lot of, it's a lot of podcasts. It was a great year, though. Can I just tell you guys, I'll just tell you guys on air what I may have said to you off air. Best year, I think, of the Megapod ever. I think we had such, you guys were great. Always something interesting to say. And I think our guests, week after week after week, were always so insightful this year. There was always some random but interesting conversation. And I think that sort of set this year apart. Now I'm supposed to ask, who did you like? Now I'm supposed to ask, who'd you like better than everybody else? But I won't ask that. No, man, you guys were great. Will, this is your first year, too, man. So you started off, hit the ground running, man.
Much appreciated. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And when we talk to these people that come on and you can learn stuff from them, it's very informative and it's entertaining. And that's the whole purpose. So
the fact that you had to ramp up because Wishnev wouldn't let you talk for like the first 7 weeks, I thought that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Week 8, I finally got my first word and that was a big day for me.
That was awesome.
Todd. I was trying to keep the quality content up. You know what I mean?
I understand. Here's our guy who's always here. He's at least here once during the regular season, but he's always our Super Bowl guy because that is where he made his hay. That is how he became famous. It's Rufus Peabody, everybody. Half the Massey Peabody team, half of the Bet the Process podcast hosting team with Jeff Ma, and of course, co-founder of Unabated.
Less than half of Unabated.
Less than half of Unabated. Yeah. What are you, like a third, a quarter, a fifth? What are you?
Like a fifth, something
like
that.
Like a fifth maybe. Of Unabated? Who's it? You, Jack, and who else?
There's some other people on the back end.
Oh, they don't want to know. Okay. Other people on the back end.
No, Dan Fabrizio.
Oh, yeah. I remember,
Dan? Yeah.
Dan Fabrizio. Wow. How's he doing?
Matt Snyder, Kevin Quesada.
I don't know them. Yeah. Dan Jennings. What was Dan Fabrizio's thing back in the day?
It was Sports Insights.
Sports Insights. There we go. Sports Insights. Yeah.
I always confuse in my head Sports Insights and Sports Option. Remember that one?
Right.
Like, even though I know they're not the same at all, but
that's right.
In my head, somehow, like, the names are similar enough.
Now, Rufus was on a numbers game earlier this week. So for those who heard that, there's going to be a little repetition here. But for those who remember Rufus from previous years here on this podcast, Rufus, beyond all beyond the pedigree that I just mentioned, is first and foremost, above all that, known as a very successful professional sports bettor. And you came to the fore, you came to prominence, or at least you came to the public knowledge, first from a Washington Post article over a decade ago about you betting Super Bowl props. And we talked a little bit about that. still a go-to thing for you after all these years?
It is. It's changed a little bit. I'm not running around with the team of people trying to hit these openers in Las Vegas anymore, because the openers don't really happen in Las Vegas anymore.
Right.
But we still are. We still have the band is back together. We're going to be betting this weekend. You know, little Zach White flies in tomorrow. My brother flies in tonight. Train flies in tomorrow, I think, as well. If today's Wednesday, I'm losing track of the days.
Little Zach, Big Zach, Train. Those are three?
Well, Big Zach's Mad Dog. He's not.
Big Zach's Mad Dog.
Yeah.
Okay. Little Zach, Mad Dog, Train.
Little Zach, my brother, Train.
Oh, so not the full band, but
not
most
the
of the band. Okay. And your brother has seamlessly gone in.
He has.
How do you enjoy working with your brother?
It's good. I mean, Tom, like, provides, I think his skill set is complementary.
Okay.
You know, he's not doing the modeling like I am. But he's very good at managing all the relationships we have, getting us accounts, keeping on top of that, trading. He's learned a lot, and he's an invaluable member of the team.
And you said on the show the other day that you anticipate, you can't know this for sure, but you anticipate having $2 million in action here on this game on props.
Yeah, if we don't, then I didn't plan accordingly.
What do you mean by that?
Just logistics and stuff. I'm not going to get into details.
Okay. Sorry. Logistical.
A lot of it is logistical planning and trying to figure out where you want to deploy your capital. How much do I want in the FanDuel app? How much do I want, how much do we want, to go into the Westgate app? How much do we want for someone at stations, you know, to bet there, right? How flexible are we?
It wouldn't be a matter of not finding enough edge. It would just be the logistical part of it.
It could be finding not enough of an edge.
But has that
I hope that's not the case. The thing is, there will always be edges, it feels like.
Right.
Even if they're not the huge edges on game day, like betting player X to not score two touchdowns, things like that, where, you know, if I'm laying -700, you know, on something I think should be -936,
right,
that's an edge. It's not a huge ROI, but...
No. Okay, so the biggest difference you were talking about, you back in the day, you used to do the whole thing, and we remember it if we were in Vegas... You know, the Westgate could be relied on to have their opening props at a certain time and date during the week.
It used to be Tuesdays before they went to Thursday.
Tuesdays and then to Thursdays, right? 2-week run-up, but the week before the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other books, it would always be like, word of mouth, oh, my God, the South Point just opened. Oh, my God, the William Hill just opened, you know, and that was the third thing. But now you're saying of that $2 million, you've got $50,000 in play so far.
Yeah.
And you are about to do $1.95 million of that, and we're doing this Wednesday morning, 3 days before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little – I mean, we've never had this small an amount bet at this point. We just haven't really done anything yet.
Okay, on Monday when you were on a numbers game, you were pretty nonchalant about it. You're a little more nervous about it now?
I'm not nervous. I'm just overwhelmed with the work I have to do still.
Okay.
And didn't get enough
sleep. And you're still doing it right now.
I'm not doing it.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out who G.I.R. Brown is, but
can I tell people what the notebook that you have that you were writing all your notes in? So
sure.
Rufus sits down and he plops this down in front of me as he's doing his notes. And his notebook is titled this is actual printed, Living with a Micro Penis, Overcoming the Stigma of Having a Small Penis, which is a real conversation starter.
It was a gift from a friend.
It's so great. I would totally get one of those. Just sit down next to somebody, next to a girl, pop that down and be like, hey, what do you mean? Like you said, it can only be a surprise for me.
She can't say I didn't warn her.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So that's where you are right now. Do you have anything, and we'll start, we'll bring in Todd and Will for this. On the side and the total, will you have anything? By the way, it should also be noted that Rufus just asked me if he could borrow 10 bucks from me to pay the valet downstairs.
It turns out I didn't bring my wallet with
me. So there's that also.
I was in the car, and I was like, where's my wallet?
Yeah.
Oops.
Do you have anything on the side and total? Will you have anything on the side and total?
I don't. I probably won't, but I probably will have stuff that might be correlated with it. So I might have some alternate totals or alternate sides or things like that, but not on the primary game market.
And the alternate ones will be because they are not priced correctly.
Probably. I mean, yes.
Yes.
Because otherwise, why would I bet something if it was priced correctly?
But is that always going to... But what else goes into that? If it's not just the pricing being incorrect, what else... When you mean correlate, you're not going to have a play on the thing, but you're going to have someone alternate. just because there's a variance of outcomes that you will have?
Well, I think I'll have things that are correlated to the under most likely in general. So I may not have an alternate total on the game, but I'll probably have like
props.
Patrick Mahomes to have zero touchdown passes or a lot of props that are going to be correlated to the under. I'll have some correlated to the over as well.
Okay.
Probably to some of the tail events. Like, I mean, there was a lot of scoring last year, wasn't there?
In the Super Bowl last year? Yeah.
I don't even remember the score.
Yeah.
38-35, I think.
Yeah, it was really high scoring, and we actually had a really good Super Bowl. We returned over 10%. So kind of ran where we expected to, but if you had told me there were 70 points scored, I would have said that we probably lost a lot. So I think we're more diversified than we used to be in that regard.
38-35, as we'll say.
We made a lot of money on defensive player stuff last year and betting against sacks. We were very anti-sack, and it turns out the field conditions were in our favor.
Yes, they complained.
Did not anticipate that.
They complained very much about those field conditions. Both teams did. By the way, are you familiar with Fieldgate this year?
No.
About the practice facilities? No, it doesn't have anything to do with
the game. Tell me, please.
The Niners are very upset at their field conditions at UNLV.
Are they practicing at like Sam Boyd Stadium or something?
So whatever UNLV gave them. You know, because the Chiefs get the Raiders practice facilities, all their, you know, state-of-the-art indoor and outdoor stuff.
Well, why do they get that?
Are
they the home team?
That must be it. Yes, because
it's a designation of who the home team is.
Yeah, it's pre-designated locations for every Super Bowl.
So it's like NFC, AFC alternates.
Correct. So,
that means the Chiefs got a good one last year. They got a nicer practice facility last year. The Chiefs got a bad practice facility last year.
Right.
Sorry.
The difference,
and they still won.
The difference here, though, being that, like, the Niners went ahead. They were like, wait a minute, the field is spongy. We can get players hurt on this. And there's something called a GMAX score, first time I've ever heard this, which quantifies the ability of the playing surface to absorb the kinetic energy from a collision. The lower the score, the more energy the field absorbs, potentially creating an injury risk for the player in question. Typically, a GMAX score is between 70 and 80. The Niners practice field only got a 48.
Ooh.
They did a bunch of quick improvements that got to the low 50s. Roger Goodell completely dismisses it. And so what ends up happening is that probably tomorrow, when the practices get a little more serious, the Chiefs are going to go to the Niners are going to go to the Raiders practice facility. They're going to practice super duper early. The Niners are pissed behind the scenes that Goodell could have told the Chiefs, well, at least move their practice so we can get a better practice time. Goodell wasn't willing to do that. He's like, go take it up with the Chiefs. Jed York said, it's not the Chiefs' problem. They didn't create this problem. So the Niners, even though Shanahan out loud is like, it's no big deal, we're not worried at all, they're a little pissed. And they almost went back to Santa Clara to practice.
Well, it's the whole script, right? Haven't you heard?
Oh, right. That's
like the Chiefs are going to win because of Taylor Swift.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So this is all part of the plan.
Todd?
So maybe I will bet on the Chiefs.
There it is. End of show. Todd, did you have anything on the side or total?
No, I don't think so. I'm just going to in-game it.
Willie?
I do think what Todd said about in-gaming, it's probably the better way to go, just because at two, there are some 2.5s. Like, these live markets are so sensitive, where if San Francisco gets the ball first and gets a couple of first downs or crosses midfield, or Kansas City gets it first and goes 3 and out, you're probably going to get a 3.5 at some point, or a 3 at some point in this game. That 2, 2.5 is a little bit of a dead number. But just directionally, I like Kansas City here. I think you're getting, obviously, the better quarterback. I think you're getting the better defense. You're getting a couple of points. I like Reed more than Shanahan. There's a major kicking advantage with the Chiefs, and that's just a lot. And, you know, we talked about this on a numbers game, where it's possible the AFC is just much better than the NFC. If you look at the head-to-head with San Francisco struggling against these AFC teams, I mean, they got beat handily by the Bengals. They lost to P.J. Walker and the Browns. They got buried by the Ravens. The Ravens killed the 49ers, the Lions, the Seahawks. The Cowboys got buried by the Bills. The Cowboys lost to the Dolphins. So we went into the season thinking there's a gap between the AFC and the NFC. The AFC is a much better conference. I think with San Francisco, Dallas, and Philly playing well middle of the season, remember, Philly was 10-1, Dallas looked good. I think it swung the other way. We thought, all right, maybe these conferences are equal. Maybe we were right all along, and there's a little bit of a gap between the AFC and the NFC. So I do like the Chiefs. I don't feel great about it. Again, it's a tricky game because the Chiefs have been playing so much better recently, but the 49ers were the better team all season. But taking the points with the Chiefs in what is pretty much a toss-up game, I think is the way to go here.
Yeah, I'll do my greatest hits here. And you can, you know, to the extent you want to agree or disagree with any of this, but I think your point about the conferences is a fascinating one because it's so apparent. It's staring us in the face. We've lived with it for a whole season, and I'm not sure that we're really focusing on that. But my thing is, you can look at this game two ways from a macro standpoint. One is, on Christmas night, when both the Chiefs, Todd and I watched this Chiefs-Raiders game on Christmas Day, where the Chiefs looked horrific. And Aiden O'Connell didn't complete a pass the last three quarters of the game, and the Raiders still won. They barely, like, did design blitzes on Mahomes. He got pressured at a high rate, and when he wasn't pressured, he was patting the ball back there, looking for receivers desperately. If you had told us that day, oh, the Chiefs are still going to be in the Super Bowl, we would have just been flabbergasted. We'd be like, there's no way. And then later that night, the Niners got crushed. Brock Purdy had his laying of the egg game by the Ravens. And even with those two losses, the Niners probably would have been 5 or 6 point favorites on a neutral that day, even with those bad losses. That's one way to look at the game of, hey, just 6 weeks ago, the Niners would have been way more of a favorite. The other way is exactly what Will was saying, which is do a T-chart, do the checkmark thing. Think about old Jimmy the Greek. Quarterback, check, Chiefs. Coaching, check, Andy Reid. Tight ends, Travis Kelce, body of work, even Kittle being as good as he is, check, Chiefs. Kicker, Butker, big check mark.
Why is he a big check mark over Moody?
Really?
Yeah, I'm dead serious here.
Moody is a rookie who has looked horrible of late.
Okay, Moody hasn't missed an extra point this year. I feel like if you look just at the field goals, you throw out the extra points. There's a lot of signal in like making, what was it, like 45 out of 45 extra points, or something like that.
Well,
whereas Butker's missed some extra points. So I
think
he
missed one extra point.
Moody did?
Your points.
Okay, sorry.
I thought he missed one, but still.
Maybe he did.
Jake Moody was 21 of 25 on field goals this regular season, now we're talking. 2 of 3 from 50-plus, he missed one extra point. 21 of 25.
Easy one in the rain in Cleveland to cost me two bets against in that Cleveland game.
In the rain. It's not going to be raining
in
here.
In the postseason.
It was 39.
I mean, I hope it's not raining.
Was it the Green Bay game where he got the field goal kicked at the end of the first half when Shanahan botched it? He got the
he
field goal
kick
blocked.
In both postseason games.
Both postseason games.
Three games in a row.
He's missed in a row. And Harrison.
By the way, the other thing.
Hold on, Harrison. Let me just finish, Todd. Harrison Butker's 30 was this regular season was 33 of 35. He was perfect from 50 plus, 5 of 5. He was perfect on extra points, 38 of 38. And in that first postseason game, I believe he was 4 of 4 from field goals and 2 for 2 from the extra points. I can't remember what he was in the second one, but in the second or third. But that's the latest stat I have right in front of me. Butker is by far the better kicker.
I have a question for you. How much does like kicker skill improve at age like 28 versus age 27? Like how much should we be weighting previous seasons? Like, for example, last year Butker was 38 for 41 in extra points. Like career, he's only 94.5% in extra points.
Yeah.
He's been in the league a long time. You always see this with a kicker will have a really good year with the team, maybe after being released by another team because he was kicking poorly.
Your point.
You see this all the time. Like it's a small sample size.
Your point is well taken. Would you not put the check mark for Butker? Is what you're saying?
I would put a small check mark, but I don't think it's a big check mark. I don't think it's a big check mark.
I'm making a point. It's like when someone interrupts.
Butker last year was 18 for 24 on field goals last year. 18 for 24, 75%. That had to be one of the low marks in the league.
Anyway, you still said you put the check mark for Butker.
Last year, going into this game, probably going into the Super Bowl, people were probably like, oh, Butker's a liability for the Chiefs. Like, Butker does not get the check mark.
Okay, but the Niners certainly don't here. And so they also, for what Will's point was about schedule, Chiefs get the check mark. So I've just listed 5 check marks for the Chiefs, none for the Niners. The Niners' biggest check mark is their only check mark, which is a massive offensive advantage as a whole, as a collective, right? So I'm just saying the spread on Christmas night, this check mark thing,
You picked some random positions to give them the check marks, right? You're like tight end, kicker. You didn't say
I'm just thinking of the bigger positions on. Okay,
look. Kicker, very big position.
Well, it is, isn't it?
You should be. Are you taking kicker MVP odds?
No, but if you're wait a minute, are you minimizing the importance of a kicker?
For sure.
Well, then you've got to be kidding me.
In terms of like, I mean, all the kickers are so close together, except maybe the Detroit kicker in terms of value.
It's like when Bill Maher gets interrupted on a bit. We're like, we're doing a bit here. I'm going through the whole thing. You have still not refuted the point that the check mark should go to the Niners. They should go to the Chiefs. The Chiefs get so many more. Are you disputing that they wouldn't get all those check marks?
So you're saying the Chiefs are a more talented team than the 49ers?
No, I'm saying I got the Niners to be the Chiefs exact at 11-1. I got MVP.
That's amazing.
I got MVP bets on only Niners. I'm financially into the Niners here. I want the Niners to win. But I'm just trying to make the case for both sides. And the biggest check marks, one could argue, are quarterback and coaching, which I think, given Kyle Shanahan's propensity to choke it up in some of these games, I think that those are the two biggest check marks. Though, that large check mark on the Niners offense is what has me in the position I'm in. So,
Gilly, what about the check mark about the last two games? They shouldn't even be in the Super Bowl.
That's exactly right.
They should have easily lost to the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
They should have easily lost to the Detroit Lions. Now, granted, the Chiefs looked like absolute shit up until the last couple weeks, but Andy got in there, started cooking up things and doing his old Andy stuff. And Andy, I like Andy in a situation where he's not the overwhelming God. I like him when he's like a dog. I remember him in Philadelphia. I don't know if you guys remember when they first came up with Donovan McNabb, and they would be underdogs and they would cook up these amazing game plans. And that's what I felt like the last couple weeks in the playoffs. He was cooking up some great game plans. He knows his team has deficiencies in catching the football specifically, but, you know, he cooked it up. And here's one other thing. And I said this to Cleve TA on our last Megapod. The San Francisco 49ers can't stop the run.
Oh, that was my other big check mark, is that the Chiefs defense is currently a check mark too.
And the Detroit Lions ran all over them, as did the Packers. And if Pacheco, this is why I'd like to in-game the game. And if Pacheco is going to get the ball handed off and gash for 6 and 7 yards a play 4 times in a row, and then they run on 3rd and 12 and get it like the Detroit Lions did, it's going to be a long day for the San Francisco 49ers defense, as it's been for many, many of the last couple weeks. Now, granted, they're supposedly the better team from the whole year. I'm with you. And the reason I don't want to just take the Chiefs right off the bat is it looks too obvious to me, and it smells. Whenever in the NFL it looks too obvious, you got to be careful. And now you're going to get the Niners' best performance, you would think, after they know they shouldn't have been in there. But, you know, right off the bat, like you said, the Chiefs look better now.
And while that was happening, the Chiefs were beating the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Ravens. Felica just texted earlier that on ESPN they pulled 64 of their on-air personalities. Who's going to win the game? 49 said the Chiefs. So the Niners are winning, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. Can we call him Pacheco Mark? The problem is he probably doesn't get the check mark. I think McCaffrey gets the check.
Of course he does. Yeah. Oh, that when it comes to offensive skill, it's all Niners. Anyway.
Massive gap, too. The 49ers skill guys compared to the Chiefs guys. It's a massive advantage.
Gap.
I will say this, too. Yes. One more thing, like, in support of the Chiefs. I think, like, to Todd's point about the Chiefs dropping the ball, since the playoffs started, they've really weeded out some of these weak parts. I made the comparison earlier on a numbers game to a baseball team when they get to the playoffs. They don't use their fifth starter. Sometimes they don't use their fourth starter. They don't use their lesser bullpen guys. It's just like their 3 or 4 best starters, their 3 best bullpen guys, because the guys like Tony, Justin Watson, these guys have been weeded out. They really only trust Kelce, Rice, Pacheco, and their usage has gone up, and they've kind of weeded out the other guys.
I also think that while it's important in any sporting event, or while it's advantageous to score first, and I usually say this before game 7 of a playoff in hockey. Oh, if you score that first goal and you're up 1-0 in a game, say, oh man, what a big advantage that feels like. I feel like these two teams, for as offensively strong as we think of the Niners, and as offensively strong as we think of Mahomes historically, if either of these teams fall behind one score, let alone two, and we've seen it with the Niners, you might be able to miraculously or improbably come back against the Lions or the Packers. It's a different thing against a Patrick Mahomes who seems to have embraced this game managerial thing that's going on with him. Like, he gets that his defense is good. He gets that his offense is considerably worse than it used to be in terms of his offensive options. Like, I don't know that the Niners can do that against Chiefs. And by the way, conversely, like, I don't think Mahomes wants to be in a position where he's got to outmatch the Niners offense if they're down. So I don't know.
I mean, you're forgetting, like, the Ravens were down, but the Ravens probably, I mean, you can make your argument they should have won that game.
Oh, yeah.
You had the fumble into the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You had the interception down the middle. Like, you had, I mean, the Ravens lost the turnover battle 3-0. The Chiefs averaged 4.4 yards per play. They didn't score in the second half. Like, I think that we're picking and choosing narratives here.
Let me just say again. I am financially into the Niners. I'm just trying to make the case for both.
I'm not financially into either team yet.
Yeah. I'm just trying to say that there's so many different ways to look. I'm not picking and choosing. I'm trying to give every possible narrative there is. And I think that there is so – that's what makes this handicap so interesting, right? Because I do think you can lock into one of those and be convinced of it without thinking of the others. That's my
point. I think if we were doing the show last week, I would have picked the 49ers. Like, I'm not being wishy-washy for the sake of the content, because like, who wants to listen to a podcast? Well, I think this is why this team could win.
Right.
I think this is why that – I mean, there's then you're just – I don't know. I don't think that's fair. Like – I don't know. I bet the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs. I will say, like, I've been back and forth. Rufus, if you had to pick this game, who would you pick?
Yeah, you're forced to.
It's tough because my numbers would say the Niners.
Yep.
Although, to be honest, I don't think I actually ran the Massey Peabody ratings this week, because it's like, it's one game is not going to move the needle that much. That's just right. The nature of the beast, right? But going into this week, last week, it would have been Niners minus like 4.1. So you could say maybe it's now Niners minus 3.5 or something like that, but not enough for me to bet it. And I do agree. I mean, it does feel like this is – it feels in my gut like the Chiefs, but I probably would stick to my process and bet the 49ers if I was forced to.
See, it feels in my gut that it's the Niners. Like, unless Brock Purdy just has that lay-an-egg game again, which I guess he has in him.
It's a huge factor.
It is a huge factor.
Maybe he got the nerves out of the way now.
Maybe.
I don't know.
We don't know.
But unlikely.
Yeah, how many Jimmy Garoppolo itches does he have? Interceptions that should have happened. Many, many, many.
Hey, don't hate on Garoppolo.
The other thing that Rufus said, 4 point yards. But I agree. They didn't do much in the second half. But they're playing the Ravens. Okay, the 49ers are playing minor league teams, the Lions and the Packers, and they're getting out by the skin of their barely getting, you know, they should have lost those games. I mean, the Ravens crushed those teams. So, you know, to me, it seems obvious that at this point in time, the Chiefs are playing better than the Niners. To me, it just seems too obvious, and I'm still scared of the fact that, yes, the 49ers were the better team for the better part of the season.
By the way, I did watch.
Bagnuolo's great too. By the way, Bagnuolo, the defensive coordinator for the Chiefs.
He is great.
He's tremendous.
He's great.
He's really good.
He's already won 3 Super Bowls as a D coordinator, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
It's funny how quickly he went from like failed. Well, actually, it's taken a while, right? He failed as head coach.
That's right.
Then,
but he was the D coordinator for the Giants when they won the Super Bowl. Before that, got the head coaching job, failed. Then I guess he won it with the Chiefs once already. And twice
it's
already.
It's true. I mean, think twice of like, already. I mean, twice Redskins already. Guy, Norv Turner. Remember, Norv Turner was a really good offensive coordinator, not a good head coach.
I think
it's a different skill set, and I think that if I was a team owner, I would be looking more for a CEO type leader for my head coach. That's just my opinion. I think they're undervalued.
Speaking of Garoppolo, last night was watching, because I'm star for football, was watching the Super Bowl from 4 years ago.
The one where Damian Williams should have won the MVP?
The one where Damian Williams should have won the MVP. Exactly right. The Chiefs were down 10 points, and the Niners had the ball in the fourth quarter. And then the Chiefs end up winning by 11. But Garoppolo was so below average, and I'm being nice. By the way, Chris Jones batted down a million of his passes. Mm-hmm. And it does leap off the page, because we tend to think of, we're like, oh, Jimmy Garoppolo, like the Niners got very, very far with him. They perhaps should have won that Super Bowl. Brock Purdy is way better than Jimmy Garoppolo ever was. It feels that way for sure now. But
way better? He's better.
He's way better.
I'm not a talent evaluator.
I think he's way better. I think he's way better. But I'll tell you why. Because Purdy, for whatever reason, people want to toggle to game manager with Purdy. He's not a game manager. Dude, he makes every throw on the field. But
I think he's better too. I'm just saying, you're saying way better. It's like, that's a lot to me.
Jimmy Garoppolo was never all that great. I mean, he's good, but he wasn't like, anyway.
We'll he was say, underrated.
Time will tell. Let's put it that way. Anyway, I do think, though, that there is that possibility, again, to try to cover every angle. There is that possibility that's lurking in behind of anybody's mind, even those of us who have financial interest in the Niners, that, God, I hope he just doesn't have that game, right, where he just Fs it up.
And if anybody's going to have that game and lose the game, you don't think it's Mahomes.
Well, it's never going to be Mahomes. Yeah. I mean,
Mahomes has had bad games. I mean, he did have that one Tampa Bay Super Bowl, didn't he?
Oh, I thought he was great in that game.
He's 60 minutes away from winning his third Super Bowl. He's already going to his fourth, and he's still in his 20s. Nothing is going to faze him.
Against Tampa, he was like a chicken with his head cut off. They couldn't block for him. I mean, they were dropping balls. He was great in that game. I thought the one really bad half he's played in his career, the Bengals AFC title game 2 years ago, which was the strangest thing ever because they went up and down the field three times, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. The fourth drive, they had the ball with the one right before the half, and they just got bogged down and threw it in bounds. And then the second half, he was awful. From that point on, he was awful. I know people like maybe he got concussed, and you don't want to start making excuses for guys anytime they have a bad game with injuries that aren't reported, but he was so bad at that game. They gave that one away, but that's really the only bad one he's played.
If anybody's going to go, Willie, if anybody's going to go Joe Flacco, if anybody's going to have a Joe Flacco make a duty in my pants in the third quarter, it's Brock Purdy. Okay,
oh, sure.
Brock Purdy is going to do it before Patrick Mahomes. That's all I'm saying.
Do you think anybody has ever actually made a duty in their pants out of nerves?
Lamar Jackson had to go to the bathroom on the field, and Tony Siragusa. Yeah. There's a famous story with Tony Siragusa that he had to go to the bathroom so bad he couldn't go to the bathroom, and nothing was coming out. And then he took all these medications before the game, and then he told the story on Howard Stern. It was amazing. And he tells the trainer before the game. He says, "If I'm down, okay, and I'm laying on my back, you got to bring out a towel." Because he was scared he was going to make in his pants on the field.
It was like man.
You have to go listen to Stern with Tony Siragusa from like 10 years ago.
The late Tony Siragusa.
Oh, and the best part is they were wearing their white on white uniforms.
Oh, yes, they were.
It's great.
Brutal.
By the way, Chiefs in red, I think, for this one. Niners in their white, just like the one 4 years ago, for those who give a damn about that kind of thing. All right. Props. Mr. Prop Man. What have you bet so far? The 50K you've bet thus far, what's in there?
Well, first off, as I said to you 2 days ago, I guess it was, one of those bets was actually a mistake bet.
That's right. Tell that story.
So I have my little spreadsheet that it's called Super Bowl Distributions and Matchups, which basically I put the results of these simulations I run in there, and so I can literally just type in, you know, I have references, so I can type in like a number, like I can type in 13.5, like I have a column for longest rush and 13.5 for Mahomes, and it'll reference the simulations and give me what that price should be. So Mahomes and Pacheco, like there's a lot of names in the spreadsheet. I mean, not that many, but.
And you're getting older.
I'm getting older. You know, my vision is still, I don't have to wear glasses still, so that's good, or contacts, but maybe I should. After the story, you know, I'm looking, I put in 13.5. It says like over minus 120 or something. It wasn't a big edge. But I was like, oh, I get to bet a Mahomes over now. I'm sure I'll be betting unders at game time. Little did I know, I was actually looking at Pacheco's longest rush number. So And then I ended up, you know, talking to Patrick Everson and Ben Fox afterwards, cause they were asking what I'd bet. And then Patrick Everson writes this, and I gave a narrative about it, about like, well, you know, Patrick Mahomes, it's the playoffs. He's going to run more. He's more likely to scramble more. And that's generally the case for quarterbacks, that athletic running quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, they do scramble more in the playoffs. But also I was like, well, you know, probably less likely to slide than he would in a normal game. Yeah. You know, it makes sense, but there's now an article sitting out there with why I like over 13.5 for Mahomes' longest rush. So.
And they're furiously tweeting it out.
Can I ask you something, Rufus? On your modeling, right, is there, like, I would find it very interesting, and maybe the audience would too, if you don't mind sharing, if you have maybe, like, for instance, on a Patrick Mahomes rush, that's a great one to talk about. What is the goulash? What is the guts of what the model is taking? Like, is it taking 100 different variables? Is it taking 4 different? Is it weighting the 3 most important being how he's done against, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like what's in the model that's spitting out these numbers? If you don't mind sharing.
Exactly. It's not exactly what I asked on a numbers
game. It's not that complex. Yep. Cause you're when you're pricing all these props, you can't go that much detail. I mean, you can, I guess, but quarterback rushing is probably, I'd say, certainly the most complex of all the all the rushing.
Well, give
props.
Us one simple.
Okay, no, I think let's go with quarterbacks. I like this because okay. So quarterback rushes come in three flavors. Can you guess what they are, Todd?
The three flavors of quarterback rushes.
Yeah.
Kneel, scrambles, designed runs.
Boom. There you go.
What is it? Sneaks, scrambles, designed runs.
Oh, no. Kneels.
Kneel downs.
Kneel downs, designed runs, scrambles. So designed runs, okay. You could have quarterback sneaks versus other. I agree. I mean, I don't actually differentiate those, which maybe that's actually probably a smart move to do. But I've designed, because those are designed runs, but designed runs, kneel downs, and scrambles. Kneel downs are a function of the spread and basically the point spread and, you know, what are the odds? Like, you might get zero, you might get
right.
Three.
There's obviously a number.
There's a number,
correlated to.
I will say, I normally give kneel downs -1 rushing yards. I was very fortunate 3 years ago, I guess. Was it 3 or 4 years ago?
Four.
Yeah, it was right before
ago.
The pandemic. I was very fortunate 4 years ago that Patrick Mahomes took some kneel downs of more than -1 yards. Yeah. Or less than
I got
yards.
That one, too. That was lucky.
That was very lucky. But so there's that. Then there's the design. Predicting the design runs is for Mahomes. There's not really like he doesn't quarterback sneak it. You don't really see right. Mahomes design runs. So for him, it's basically going to be the scrambles and the quarterback sneaks. And so scrambles
he
like
doesn't sneak anymore either because of the injury. They say
exactly.
They never sneak him.
Yeah, he doesn't sneak. So it's for him. It's the scrambles. So I'm looking at his scramble rate. What percentage of dropbacks is he going to scramble? And trying to predict that, and then also looking at the defense they're up against, San Francisco, what percentage of dropbacks for other quarterbacks result in a scramble there, and going from there to establish a scramble rate, and then same thing with like the yards per carry on the scrambles. And what's interesting, by the way, is the correlation between scrambles and sacks. Generally, I mean, because they're in essence, oftentimes a sack is a failed attempted scramble. You know,
right?
Like I think Mahomes got sacked last year on a play where he ran out of bounds for a loss of 1 yard when he was scrambling. So there is. So you can kind of get. You can go a little more detail there with the relationship
the dropback,
between those two.
Give us
a dropback. Are you taking into account the fact that like, what are the chances that the Chiefs are going to be way behind and having to throw a lot, or is that just kind of like? It just goes by the whole season. This whole season, this is what he's done on scrambling. This is what the Niners have done. Or are you thinking about the actual matchup as well and saying, hey, well, look, they might be behind. And if they're behind, he's going to throw more and more dropbacks, more scrambles. Is that true or no?
Well, right. I'm predicting the number of dropbacks. Right. So more dropbacks equals more scrambles. But I things are on a rate basis. So you are right. I am looking when I'm trying to predict the run pass mix. And by the way, I consider a scramble a passing play because it was an intent. It was a play that was designed to be a passing play. So I basically look at how often a team runs or passes relative to expectation based on game state. You know, if you're up 14 in the fourth quarter, much more likely you're running than if you're down 14. So I look at what the right. Chiefs have done this season in those, you know, I weight more recent data more heavily. The Chiefs, despite the fact that we talk about them now as like a running team, are still a pretty extreme passing team. They have been all year relative to game situation.
Historically,
but this year too.
Well, no, I'm asking a question. Historically, what is the in all your Super Bowl prop years, to the extent that you're willing to share, what is the calculus you were just talking about with quarterback runs, give us a category where you felt like you were way ahead of the books more than others.
Ooh. I mean, maybe I think the longest reception type stuff, longest rush type stuff, probably a little bit with being able to sort of smooth that out and look at.
Because they were just averaging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And in understanding regression of the mean for that, you could have a receiver that's had, you know, 63% of his receptions for 10 or fewer yards this year. And it's like, 12% of them were exactly, or maybe 15% are exactly 10 yards or something like that. And none were exactly 11 yards. Do you expect that to continue? That's probably random. So, so being able to sort of smooth that out and then regress properly, but
that still exists, your advantage there, do you think?
I think a little bit for sure. And there's interesting narratives that get baked in too. So George Kittle is interesting in the fact that if you look at his distribution of receiving yards or yards per reception in the first half versus the second half, it's been very different. And not just this year, over the last three seasons, you know, the second half, I think something like 67% of his receptions go for more than 10 or more yards.
Huge,
and in the first half, it's like 50%. And so how much there is like different routes he's running? Is it, you know,
well, it's probably because It's probably because if he's getting the ball thrown to him in the second half, it's because they're behind. So they might be running deeper patterns, because typically they'd be ahead in the second half. And if he's getting the ball thrown to him, it's probably not happening as much because they're going to be running. No,
but I haven't broken it down based on ahead or behind, but I would assume they're playing most of these games from ahead. They have been the last 3 years.
Right.
Because I saw it this season. I'm like, they have a different quarterback, but they've had, both teams have had the same head coach and de facto offensive coordinator for a long time. And so it's not like the system has changed that much. And so for me, I think I was like, does this persist in previous seasons? The answer was yes. But at the same time, it still is a small sample. And I think this case, maybe there is something to it. And I'm probably going to dig a little deeper into it. But I think a lot of times we can be fooled by things. And because overall, if you look globally, the yards, if you're trying to like handicap something like length of first reception, I've looked, is there something different about the first reception than other receptions? Globally, no. So right. You could argue, though, that maybe there are for certain players. But then that's when you kind of want to get, I'd want to get into something a little more granular to be able to predict that, like to be able to look and see, oh, George Kittle is running different routes in the first quarter or early in the games than he is in the second half. If I saw that, then I'd be like, okay, ding, ding, ding. This is actually something fundamental and predictive versus, you know, maybe he's running versus if he was running basically the same type of route patterns, but he's just gotten more throws on these deeper routes or gotten more yards after the catch or something like that.
I asked this on the radio side. I'll ask it here. If there's somebody listening to this who says, oh my God, this is my fucking hero. This is the human being I want to be. Rufus Peabody is my North Star. What do you recommend to that person as a way to start towards this path?
Therapy.
Okay, besides the psychological part of it, what sort of nuts and bolts would they need to have as an educational background?
I think being comfortable with numbers, for sure. And so for me, that came in the form of, or at least in a more formal way, statistics and econometrics courses back in college. And then I kind of went from there. And then also the ability to sort of code, to be able to kind of answer these questions and build processes to answer these questions.
I think that's
the way I think of like numbers, right? Like in stats, like it's a way I can ask a question, the data, and get an answer.
And your guy, Captain Jack, has those videos of how to start modeling. I think that's a good start for people probably, right?
I think that's a great, great place to point them to, Todd.
Captain Jack does a great job.
He looks suave, by the way.
He does, doesn't he?
He looks very suave.
And he was trying to downplay it.
Look, when you're 309 pounds, there's no suave. There's passable. That's the best you can get.
I've lost a lot of weight here recently, Todd. I'm coming for Fezzik.
What do you weigh now?
219.
Well, how'd you get down to 219?
Well, a little illness sort of sped it up.
The old illness trick. I hate to tell you, my friend, what comes after the illness is the water weight comes back.
No, I had already been on the downtrend, though. This just sort of turboed it.
I had gained 5 pounds. I feel like I might have lost them because I haven't been working out as much as I would like to since I've been in Vegas. But
wait, so I have another Rufus question. Well, I have a couple more. One, we'll get to the props here, individual props here momentarily. The when you and I used to talk over a decade ago about, and I remember like you were super young, but you had like some introspective thoughts about how, you know, you loved doing what you were doing, you were having success doing what you're doing, but you didn't view your life as just going to be sports betting for the rest of the time. You wanted to do other things, other more meaningful things, you said at the time. Have you become more comfortable as the years have gone on that sports betting will always be what you do first and foremost?
It's a great question. I'm
going to say no. I'm going with no. Would like me to answer it for you?
I had these hopes and dreams that I would branch out.
He did have hopes and dreams.
I kind of have tried to a little bit, with things like Unabated, right? Although still in the sports betting realm, but something I've been looking to find more purpose in that way. Just because I've been doing the same thing, what, for 14?
More than
14 years.
More than half your life, almost. Almost.
I'm 38. I'm 38. Know, but
only 14? It seems like more.
It does, right?
Well, if you go back to college, how old are you now?
I wasn't betting in college.
Yeah, but you were still writing shit, right, on baseball and stuff, right?
My senior year.
All right. Well, that's still how many years? That's 16 years then.
2007.
I mean, unless you graduated when you were 24.
No. Okay. But, okay. Right. So anyway, 2007, yeah. I guess.
Okay.
Right. We're in 2024 now.
So you still have hopes and dreams.
Well, I think what's I'm gonna bring a parallel here to gambling. Like one thing I do like about gambling is the uncertainty in a way. Like
right.
I've learned to love that and to love like I can control. There's certain things I can control, but certain things I can't control, and not to stress over the things I can't control. But if somebody told you like laid out where your life was gonna be ahead of time and said, okay, in 10 years you're gonna be doing this other thing, or you know, would you want to see that?
No,
I wouldn't.
I
and
would
so
not.
For me, I love not knowing where my life is going to go.
I think
right now I don't have any immediate plans to get out of the industry, but I'm definitely burned out. I feel like I've been burned out for like 5 years. It's certain times. I mean, certain times I wake up like rearing to go with ideas and wanting to work. But as I get burned out, like is that unfortunately the percentage of that, the time I'm that way has become less over time. And so
I'm with you on, I don't want to know. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Who knows
people
where my life's going to go?
People who are born on October 19th are typically not just one-dimensional. And we know from Rufus, some of Rufus's Twitter pics, he's a little bit of a deeper thinker than your typical Neanderthal sports bettor. So I have a feeling that it's not just going to be about sports for Rufus.
I have a feeling, too.
I appreciate that, Todd.
I have a feeling, too. Yeah.
And I think
way,
people born on October 19th are just fantastic human beings.
Wait a minute.
Well.
Were you both born on October 19th? Is that what I'm getting?
Yes. Oh. Yes, of course.
We had a podcast before. I think it was like on or around that day.
Oh, that's right.
That's how we figured it out.
That's right. Okay.
The other thing, can I just ask him one other quick
please,
question,
yes.
Billy?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to know is on the data. Right, you have to get the data into your model. Do you have like data scrapers from play-by-play, or how do you get the data into the model?
Can I answer this for you? Yes, because the very first time I met you was at Sloan, and we were at a Celtics game, and in the suite you were talking about data scraping. It was like a first line out of your mouth. I was like, "Who's this guy?"
So, I mean, there's some data that we scrape and some data that we buy. So it's a combination.
You buy from SportsRadar?
No. I don't use SportsRadar, but I used Armchair Analysis for a long time, which is now FTN data.
Oh.
But so I still do that because they have, like, basically I have these historical processes that rely on certain files that, and as you know, I'm not betting NFL stuff largely during the season, so I kind of, it's not like I've invested a ton of effort into upgrading these things. So I kind of, you know, I'm a bit of a dinosaur of a prop bettor still because I only do it once a year.
Golf and college basketball now are your go-tos.
Yeah, and college football too, but we had a losing year for college football this year.
You did.
Sadly.
Okay, but you still do super. Yeah, go ahead, Todd. I'm sorry.
By the way, Rufus, on
your
college
show,
basketball,
yeah.
You may want to look at data scraping from 5 minutes down, what the average score is. Like if I had a data scraper sitting right here, I would be doing – what's the score with 5 minutes left with what the score in the game is based on what the original line was? There is definitely, because I know just from watching a million games, and obviously I'm not going to be as accurate as a data scraper, but there is definitely value there.
Well, the scraper just gives me the data. It doesn't tell me anything about it.
No, but I'm saying I would know if you got the data on spreadsheets, I would know how to query it and say, okay, what's the average amount of points scored in a game that is a 6-point game? The favorite it was an 8 pregame, and there's 5 minutes left.
So you're talking about the last 5 minutes. You're good at that.
Well, no, I'm. That's not what
figuring out the situational stuff there. No,
we've been good at the last 5 minutes lately because I've noticed that they're overinflating the last 5 minutes. Totals higher because probably everybody wants to bet the total. And then the bigger thing is that no one's fouling in the last minute the way they used to. So it used to be, there was, let's say, if it used to be 1.0 fouls, now it's 0.65 of that. You're getting, you know, only two-thirds.
So teams are not, I mean, I don't know. It feels like there's certain teams that, right, they're not fouling down 9 with 20 seconds left like they used to be is what you're saying.
Sometimes they're
even
not
North Carolina last night.
With a minute left.
There was a game last night, South Carolina. I think we had a small over on it, like over 135 and a half.
Nobody scored the last 3 minutes.
And it was a 5-point game, and there was 2 points scored the last 3 minutes. You expect, like, you're like, okay, that's definitely going to win, right? Yeah. How does that not win?
That's what I'm saying. The last minute has changed.
But you also had another game that I actually had an under on where there were – was it Butler? I forget. No, it wasn't Butler game. But there were
– North Carolina was down 6 with a minute left and didn't foul for some reason. They just played it out, which, spoiler alert, it didn't work out for them.
Okay.
No, but, I mean, it's probably not going to work out fouling too. But there was a game where there was like 35 points scored in the last 3 minutes, though, without really fouling. I don't know. Which game was that, Todd?
All right, two things. One, I thought we weren't talking about this on air.
I know I should.
I want to add something in response to Todd's thing, though. But what's interesting in the last 5 minutes is that, like, if you have a big – and Todd knows this, I'm sure. But, you know, with the big blowouts, you have sometimes the teams – you know, it's a 30-point game. You know, they're going fast. They're just playing, like, having fun.
That's an over game.
Right.
A 30-point game is an over game.
If it's a 15-point game, you know, one team's going to be going slow, one team's going to be going fast, and then you have a few possessions, basically, that determine everything, right? Where with a minute and a half to go, is it going to be a 9-point game or is it going to be a 13-point game? Like, and that
well,
right
that
there.
Has switched. That has switched now to the point where what I'm – anyways, I won't say it again. I told Gilly not to bring it up.
And here he comes on.
See, what would be interesting to do for me is to analyze and say, given this situation, like you can have a – like, and this is what I've done actually for modeling end game stuff, like a thing that predicts whether a team will foul in a situation based on a take foul, right? Like one thing that's hard is trying to figure out like, okay, you know, because sometimes they'll go for a steal first, so it's not an immediate foul to be able to identify whether it's a intentional foul or not. But whether they're foul based on score differential and time remaining. And so I could take a look and sort of see if that's up,
well,
right?
All,
or
all
if that's or down,
do,
I guess,
you,
sorry.
If you data scrape, even just look at the last minute, all you have to do is look at 100 games of the last minute of 3 years ago and 100 games this year.
Yeah, but you have to control. You got to control for situation, though. That's my point. Like, if we have a model and now teams are undershooting, like they're fouling less than we'd expect them to in those situations, then yeah, I'll take yeah.
Okay.
But what's interesting is that totals are up this year. I mean, scoring's up. I mean, but that you do have the rule change.
Welcome back to the Super Bowl 58, man.
Okay, sorry,
everybody. Really, I apologize. And I apologize to myself for bringing that
this
up.
This is what happens to people with who were born October 19th.
Sorry to interrupt
we go
your
down
show.
Rabbit holes.
Sorry to interrupt your show, Todd. It's that Todd specifically did not want to talk about this on air, and yet here we are. So,
He brought it up.
Well, it was just because Rufus got me. When Rufus is here, it just gets me into, like, a data discussion.
No, and the first question is a good one. I asked that on a numbers game, too, which is, what is the secret sauce behind your Super Bowl props, specifically? Anyway.
Big game props.
I'm a superb owl, as your brother says. That's the best line ever. It's the rapist. the rapist for 500, Alex. Superb owl. Getting around all the copyright things. Okay, so you're mainly now a college basketball and golf guy. You've always been golf. You weren't doing college basketball. You've done it now in the last couple years. You told me the other day it's because somebody came to you and said, hey, I think I might have something here.
No.
And so you did it.
No, it's actually so this guy that I brought on, he's on Twitter, Telemachus Model, or Telemachus. Really, really smart, brilliant guy. The best decision I've ever made in my career was, like, bringing him on.
Wow.
And
that's quite the compliment.
Yeah, he's, like, a developer background.
Yeah.
You know, our skill sets are very complementary, but he had built – he'd actually – at the time, I wanted to bring him on to help me build better infrastructure for my golf stuff. Like, it had nothing to do with college basketball, but I saw – but he was talking about this college basketball stuff he'd built, and I was, like, completely blown away by how good the framework was and everything, and so I've been able to contribute in some ways to building better projections there, but it's his baby.
And so Super Bowls, or the NFL, as you just intimated, NFL is not something you are, like, super into during the regular season. You still do it, but it's not to the extent of those other two sports.
The NFL?
Yeah.
I bet very little. I think I had some teasers, which didn't do well this year. Some halftime bets, which also didn't do great this year.
That's interesting. But. Because the edge is just simply not there, or you just don't want to expend the work.
Well, I mean, the teasers are like, I mean, I just use the unabated teaser.
No, but I'm just saying the NFL in general, though. I'm just saying,
It's not worth. I mean, it is Gil, it's really difficult to do a bunch of sports and do them all well.
I
firmly believe markets tend toward efficiency. It gets harder and harder to win betting sports.
Completely.
And so you have to I've realized I have to specialize more to be able to keep my edge. What I've done is try to scale out the things that I'm best at.
Yes.
That's kind of what we've done. We've scaled out golf and college basketball a lot. And so we're betting more than we've ever bet while betting fewer sports.
Okay. And I 1,000% agree with all of that. To the Super Bowl then, in your Super Bowl history, you've had losing Super Bowls before.
Oh, for sure.
Percentage of wins, though, is more?
Yes.
Okay. What was your best one? What was your worst one?
Best in terms of ROI was the first Super Bowl I was ever in Vegas for, which was the Cardinals and the Steelers, which to this day I still have not watched that Super Bowl. I was so nervous.
Such a great game, too.
I was playing a round of golf at the Callaway, or is it TaylorMade now? You know the little nine-hole place right by the airport?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd borrowed $10,000 from a friend. I put my entire $15,000 bankroll into action, or whatever it was. Maybe it was $20,000 bankroll. And then I had someone invest $40,000 in me and give me a 20% free roll on it.
Oh,
and
man.
I ended up having like 60-some thousand in play, which for a 22-year-old kid who had just finished college, like that was a lot of money for me.
Oh,
okay?
My God, yeah.
And I was so scared. And when I looked at the box score, Gary Russell scored the first touchdown. I had bet him to score at like 25-1 or something like that. And
you knew it was going to be all right.
Like the return was, it was a 40% ROI Super Bowl. So
that
was the best. But, you know, unfortunately, it was the Super Bowl that I bet the least amount of money on.
What was the worst?
Oh, that had to be the Eagles Patriots.
Because it was so high scoring?
Yeah, it was high scoring. And then we had like, I think the one guy we had over on was Brandon Cooks, and he got injured. He got concussed in the first quarter.
Did you lose on the Philly special too, specifically?
Yeah, there was a fourth down conversion. There was basically all the things you don't want there to be happen. And we knew it was bad at halftime, and we were staying at Train's place. We were all watching it there, and I remember, which is right on the Legacy Golf Course. We like hopped the fence and played like drunk played the 10th hole there at halftime, and we were just like, yeah, we got blitzed because it was bad.
All right, let's do it. People have been waiting for props. What'd you get? What'd you bet so far?
You know,
besides the mistake, what'd you bet? Well, let's start with these guys.
I don't have my tickets on me, and I don't even know what it was.
Todd, what have you bet so far?
Oh, it's in my
anything.
I haven't bet any.
Nothing.
I haven't bet any props. The only one I really love though is Brock to throw more interceptions than Mahomes -103.
Okay, I'll tell you what
that feels like a good one, right? Even though my numbers have them at the same like exact number of interceptions, but.
I have my Niners to beat Chiefs exacta, which is my last remaining exacta, by the way. It wasn't my only one at 11-1. That's pending. I also bet 3 MVPs before the championship games, which were McCaffrey at 6-1 to win MVP, which I think is a great number. Plus 475, which is still out there now, I think is still a great number. I did get Debo at 40-1. I got Kittle at 80-1. I kind of feel like I've made those three bets. Obviously, McCaffrey wasn't there for all of them. Every time the Niners get close to the Super Bowl or in the Super Bowl, I think I've made that every time. The props that I've made that are still out there, I have McCaffrey most rushing and receiving yards at -160. I didn't want to do rushing only and receiving only because I didn't want the chance of Pacheco beating him in the rushing category or a random Niners receiver beating him in receiving. 6 of the last 8 games, though, McCaffrey has won the rushing plus receiving. I took him at -160. Also took Mahomes.
What does that mean? He's going to be the number one in the whole game?
Number one whole
he's
game.
-160. That's kind of, I mean, it makes sense that he's a favorite, but that feels steep to me.
Steep?
I don't know.
Well, I trust you.
I can look in the Sims and find out, but.
I trust you. I bet.
So he's -160 versus everyone else in the game.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Most rushing and receiving yards combined. I bet Mahomes over 26.5 yards rushing. Just because, even though I'm on the Niners.
Well, you also know that it's probably going to close 30.5 or something.
I think it's a low number, and I think he has really strategically been great with his scrambles. And then I have a third, which I cannot even remember off the top of my head now. Will, what do you have? And I'll remember it.
I like your Mahomes rushing one. I bet that one as well. I don't know if this counts as a prop, more of a derivative. I like the Chiefs plus +0.5 in the first quarter. You can get it -155 on DraftKings. Shop around. I think that's probably the best price. I just think both teams are going to defer. You don't have any Lions or Packers situation where one team's going to win the toss and take the ball. So it's 50-50 who gets the ball first. It's just so hard to outscore another team in the first quarter. You know, the nerves with Purdy maybe. Mahomes has been here before. So, I mean, we could see a tied first quarter. We could see the Chiefs up 3-0 or 7-3. There's just lots
plus
of ways to win.
Plus the long drives, Will. Plus the, right, exactly. The Chiefs could have a long exactly. drive.
The 49ers could only get the ball once in this first quarter. So I'll take the plus a half in the first quarter. Deebo Samuel over rushing yards. I'm seeing some almost 13.5, 14.5. I just think 2 weeks for the shoulder to heal. I think they'll get him in. They'll have 2 weeks to come up with some ways to just get the ball in his hand. So I like the over rushing prop there. And you mentioned him for MVP. He's still 33-1 at some books to win MVP. You need a way to get production that's detached from the quarterback. You don't need it, but it helps. Over 1,000 career rushing yards, 19 career rushing touchdowns. I could see Deebo, if San Francisco wins, having a big day. I just think the 33-1 is a long price. Another one I like, shop around, largest lead of the game. I'm seeing some 14.5. It's not widely available, but I'm also seeing some 13.5. I would not play 13.5, but at 14.5, I would play the under. I just don't see anybody getting out to a lead where like 15 and 16 sort of a dead number. I don't see anybody pulling away in this game having a 17-plus point lead. So if you can find the under 14.5, biggest lead, I like the under.
All right, I got two more. Will the opening kickoff be a touchback? I bet this in many years past because you knew that one coach had the propensity to defer, the other had the propensity to receive. Not the case this year. However, the no is at plus 265. And Jake Moody has a touchback rate that is 25th in the NFL. Butker, 83.3%.
But here's the thing.
The Chiefs tend to, like, you know now how the touchback rules change? You can, like, fair catch.
That's
the
right.
ball doesn't go to the end zone. The Niners don't really do that. The Chiefs do.
You're saying they will call a fair catch?
Yeah, I think they're less likely to return it. I have my number somewhere because I remember seeing that them and the Niners were on, and the Chiefs were on different sides there.
Let me know if plus 265 is not a good price because that's what I got it at. I thought if Moody ends up kicking off, and obviously it comes out of that, if it's Butker, we're kind of dead on arrival probably.
I make it minus 307, but actually I make those teams about the same in terms of touchback rate because the Niners are more likely to bring it out of the end zone.
But Niners more likely to bring it out with Ray. So I bet it no plus 265. My thinking being that if Moody kicked off, we could very well get a run back.
What's Moody's rate? I know you said he's 25th, but what is his rate?
His rate is 62.39%.
Okay. So here we go. I have some numbers here. 62.39 for his touchback rate?
Yes, sir.
I don't know why I see it as 67%, but... He hits it. He gets into the end zone 70.1% of the time, whereas Butker is 84%.
Butker is 83.3. Yes.
I'm probably using like a decade rate or something like that. Okay. But in the end zone touchback percentage, 94% for San Francisco kicking off, actually that's less relevant because that's it could be like how deep does it go, but no end zone touchback rate is San Francisco this year. 10%, Kansas City this year, 23.3%. That's receiving kickoffs. League average, 20%. So.
You're saying
right, so that so that's still plays in. But what you're saying is it still plays into me, though, because San Francisco does it less.
San Francisco is less likely to take a kickoff.
Correct.
Wait.
Yes. So Gil is right.
No, it hurts you.
No,
Gil.
It hurts you. Because I don't know. I'm either that or I'm reading this my chart wrong here.
Oh.
Yeah,
what you just said.
Yeah, let's let Todd explain it.
Yeah, because Rufus said it was wrong.
Saying. He's saying that if Moody has a short kick, which is what you want Moody to have a short kick.
No, I know that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I know that's what he was saying.
Oh, yeah,
Todd.
Yeah, yeah. Wait,
I know
Kansas
that's what he was
City,
saying, but not
Kansas
the numbers.
City,
the numbers he just gave were the opposite.
No. It says Kansas City takes it back or has a touchback percentage of 23.3% on non-end zone kickoffs. San Francisco's is 10%. Kansas City's high. They're more likely to get a touchback. To say touchback
at the 5 yard line.
At the 5 yard line. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Either way, here's how I read it, that the minus 360 on the yes was way overpriced and that the plus 265 was not way overpriced.
Like your bet, Gilly.
Yeah, I
do
too.
Like your bet. I'm just saying what he's basically saying that if Moody kicks a short one, there's a
higher I know what he's saying, but that wasn't what he
Richie
quoted
James,
the first
right?
time. He misspoke.
No,
God
no, I think
it.
I said it right.
No,
I don't
didn't.
Know.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
God damn it, Todd. October 19th is not superior to June 4th. I have news for you.
They're about the same, I think. No, they're not.
June 4th is superior to all. The last one I bet was Juszczyk over a half a yard rushing at plus 270. I shouldn't have bet that. How is that plus 270?
I mean,
how? It's
Billy,
a play
how
call.
How many carries does he have?
What percentage of games does he get a carry?
I need one carry.
Right.
Right. So how many does he
get a carry most games, but
if they're in a goal to go situation, if within the 5 yard line,
it's McCaffrey or Elijah Mitchell.
Plus 270.
Right. Right.
Give
I'm just
me
asking
that.
How many?
Where does
how
he
many
get his carries?
Has he had all year?
I can't answer that question. Off the top of my head.
I'll find it.
But watch the Niners postseasons in every postseason since the Kyle Shanahan years, and
it is a
large volume. Now do the postseasons.
In six different games, Rufus?
Now do the postseasons.
I didn't tab week if let's see.
Now
I
mean,
is it in six different games? Because that helps Gilly.
Right, it does. I'm gonna look and see.
Do the postseasons.
It's in four games. In the postseason, he had one carry in week 21 this year. Let's see. Last year in the postseason, he had, let's see, carry week 20. 18 was still regular season at that point. Carry in week 20. The postseason before that, two in week 20, one in week 21. They made the playoffs in 2020. They made the Super Bowl, right? Yeah. No carries in the postseason that year.
In what? 2020. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't that year. Yeah.
I wonder.
So basically, got a 25% chance.
Here is
probably.
Here is the point of that bet. One carry.
Yeah, and three of those six carries were inside the opponent's 10. You're right.
Plus 270.
How many carries, Gilly?
If they get the ball first and goal, they did it last week, right? Or the week before, or whatever.
Gilly, what if he gets stopped for a loss?
No,
it's true, right? If it's first and goal at the one, like, you know,
what I'm really worried
about. You're not a guarantee there.
What I'm really worried about is that he gets two carries, and the first one goes for 2 yards, and the second one goes for minus two. That's what I'm really worried about.
Hand off to Jusek. He's going wide. Why is he going wide? He's going back.
Sick and tired of the pushback. June 4th, better than October 19th, 10 days a week. All right. Those are all mine.
I want to see Gil's face if he runs it right into the line, and they could give him a yard, but they might not give him a yard. And Gil's asking for like a measurement from like a second and sixth.
Funny the yards,
Willie,
the rounding of the yards.
Starting from the sideline.
It is interesting that Juszczyk props are not widely available. By the way,
no. By the way, last year's Super Bowl, I remember there was a it was that first rush, the Jalen Hurts touchdown from the one. Was it from the 1 yard line?
It was close.
I remember either
they called a touchdown, they overturned it, and then Hurts got it, right? Something like that.
Yeah, but it was. I think there was one that was. I was like, isn't that from? It was either. I don't remember if I wanted it to be the one or the two, but I remember I was like, it's not the one that you know. It's closer to the number they didn't use. You know, what's a 1 yard touchdown versus a 2 yard touchdown, right? If it's at the yard and a half, you know, 1.5 yard line.
Here's one that's interesting. I didn't bet it, but why is Elijah Mitchell's number so low? I haven't studied it, so I'm
so
sure
low.
A reason, but 3.5 rush yards.
Yeah, I mean, have you looked at the snap counts for McCaffrey during like the postseason? Like he's played every single snap except when he bonked his head.
Okay.
So I think clearly they were saving McCaffrey. So if McCaffrey's not playing, the only reason he's going out of the game at this point is if he asks out.
How about this though?
But he gets fatigued.
If Mitchell doesn't get a snap, don't you get a push because it's no action?
This is true.
And if you get to rush, you're in good shape.
My guess is Mitchell, I can look at this, is playing special teams, though.
Okay, so if he goes on the field but doesn't record a statistic, then it counts as action.
Actually, no. So it looks like week 20, he had 2% of the offensive snaps. McCaffrey had 98%. Is this just offensive snaps I'm looking at? It might just be offensive snaps. But if he goes on the field, like I think the special teams thing is something you have to watch out for there.
I think
Butker more points than Moody. What do you think about that? -110, Butker more points than Moody. I feel like Andy has more confidence in Butker and more chances to get field goals, but maybe
they both kick.
I have Kansas City a little bit higher in terms of field goal projection than San Francisco, but I don't think it's enough to overcome -110. I think it's pretty damn close. And especially given the spread of -2, I have San Francisco, like if I believe the market, which I don't know if I'm supposed to or not, after like my head is spinning after this conversation we've had. So I do have San Francisco projected slightly higher on touchdowns, given the where the spread is. So you know you get 1 point when you kick the extra point.
Todd,
if you make it.
I hope Juszczyk runs for 44 yards, and I
Gilly,
get
we're all rooting
and
for
I
you.
Get 40, yeah. and I get 44 times. Oh, is that not how that works?
Sorry.
Who's not rooting for you?
Remember at the old Rufus Jeff hypothetical book that you'd have the supersizing of bets. Remember that? It was the old points bet model, but it was like if Kyle Juszczyk ran for 44 yards, I get 44 times.
Yeah,
yeah, the whole thing.
Action points. Action,
yeah, spread betting.
Action point.
Yeah, spread,
they have that. They had that. What was that site in the UK they had point for bet. A long time? Point no, there's one in the UK too.
Yeah,
that we used to bet at back like 14 years ago.
So you have no prop to share? No specific prop to share?
Did I bet?
Yeah,
I bet some. All okay, right. I'm gonna go against you guys a little bit and say this isn't a huge edge, but I took Purdy plus 17.5 rushing yards against Mahomes. Actually, I'm not sure I took it yet, but I wrote it down.
Okay,
as a bet.
Wait. Purdy plus 17.5
rushing yards.
Is that just
It's a comparison prop.
Right, you're just looking at what the totals are set for both guys.
Yeah, but you have to remember the means and medians are going to be different. Like, so Mahomes, I mean, especially with most of it coming from scrambles, it's going to be coming in bit, you know, in spurts. You understand coming in spurts,
yeah.
Todd?
Spurts. Yes. Everyone knows about coming in spurts.
Jesus, sorry.
What are you guys, 12?
I like MVS.
You started with a micropenis book.
Yeah, that's true. I'm actually reading from it here.
Yeah.
But Valdez-Scantling, under 10.5 first reception. I know he's had some deep balls. He also has some underneath ones.
Okay. I like it.
I think this was the Westgate where you don't no reception equals under. I mean, honestly, most of the things I wrote down here, like first and longest reception stuff, because that's like all I really bet. I mean, what I'm really going to be betting is going to be like McCaffrey unders, probably Kelsey unders, probably. I'm going to be waiting until it's close to game time. Although I'll probably be having to bet Saturday night and Sunday morning too, just because it takes a lot of time to get a lot of money down.
You know, what percentage are you unders versus overs on a typical Super Bowl?
90-10 probably, but
90-10 unders.
Yeah, although overs like an over for first reception for a guy like Brandon Ayuk, which I did bet. That's something I bet, although that price isn't available anymore. Like that's an over, but it's not an over where I have the same sort of exposure to injury, right? Like betting a game over. I mean, the whole idea of player injury helping unders, like that's a big thing. I mean, what are the chances McCaffrey gets hurt? 9-10% probably, given historically. Like you have to factor that in.
Yeah.
You know, what are the chances Debo gets hurt? Like 15%. Like Debo gets hurt all the freaking time, the way he plays, like it. Yeah,
I should have mentioned off the top that the reason you're having all this money still not bet yet is because you're waiting to play unders primarily.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I think a lot of things are going to get better.
Yeah,
just especially in Las Vegas, given the fact that the Super Bowl's out here, you have you normally have a big influx of tourists here to watch the Super Bowl. Now it's kind of on steroids, and so I imagine we're going to get more public money having an outsized impact on these lines. So we will see these lines creep up and up and up. We're going to see. You know, I wonder where do you think McCaffrey rushing yards is going to close? It was, I think it opened around like 88.5 to 92.5 ish.
Jeez.
You know, is it going to get 200?
Can't.
It can. 2 years ago, I bet Cooper Kupp under 112.5 receiving yards. He won the MVP that year despite going under.
Wait, you think McCaffrey will go up 8 more yards between now and game time?
Oh, I would be disappointed if he didn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think there's a very good chance. I think I might be able to see
what
McCaffrey.
About Juszczyk going
you Juszczyk might see.
Michael. Yeah. What about Juszczyk getting to 44 yards?
we'll see the impact of this podcast.
And there goes Juszczyk.
Juszczyk was a half.
McCaffrey has been benched for Juszczyk. They found their new running back.
Harvard's Kyle Juszczyk, it should be pointed out.
So I do think these numbers will rise. I mean, I was able to bet last week at Circa, or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, the conference championship, no McCaffrey rushing touchdown at like plus 250, and then also no McCaffrey, like McCaffrey under 1.5 touchdowns at minus 190. Both of those bets lost, mm-hmm. but I thought they were both really, like, good prices, and I anticipate being able to get better prices, you know, next weekend or this coming weekend.
Anything else?
Let's see.
You have that fourth down. Anybody will make a fourth down. What do you think about that kind of stuff?
I have numbers on that. I didn't see any value. I have it. I mean, I do think someone will make a fourth down. I agree that both of these coaches, despite being, like, very good schematically, are very, you know, suboptimally conservative on fourth downs. But I think I have hold on. I have a list. I have all these things that integrate.
All right. Here's
I
why
have to search for this is great radio here.
This is why Todd doesn't have a podcast.
Fourth.
I know he thinks it's his show, but he has no sense of time, so he has no fundamental filter of sending you down a totally different rabbit hole, so that we'll be here for another 30 minutes. Well, it does not get it.
Will there be a fourth down? I make the yes minus 318. I think one interesting thing to remember in general, I'll say it matters for fourth down, but in general, when you're thinking about the game, when you like sort of search and say, oh, you know, these teams have only attempted 1 2-point conversion this year, right? Well, think about the game scripts they've been playing from during the season. They both made the Super Bowl. They both won a lot of games. They both been playing from ahead.
Yeah.
When you're playing from ahead, you don't go for fourth down as much. Because you have sort of the fourth and ones, right? You have the fourth and one analytics plays, and then you have the desperation fourth downs when you're down and you have to go for fourth down. So they haven't really had as many of those. And so I think that is worth considering in terms of the fact that you will have a team playing from a negative game script here. And so that's why I think it's probably much more likely that you get a fourth down than their base rates, than the offensive base rates this season.
So smart.
Same thing with a 2-point conversion.
Exactly.
And if it is fourth down, you got to give it to Juszczyk. Can him the ball
clearly
and let him run.
He could break it for 44.
Wait, no. What if Juszczyk, what's going to happen is Juszczyk's going to get his carry on a 2-point conversion attempt, and it's not going to count for the yards.
It's not going to count. I'm
going to love this.
That's exactly what's going to happen. That or that he'll get two carries, a gain two, and lose two. It's so screwed. By the way, plus 270, over a half a yard. I don't see how you can't bet that. Anything else? Because everybody's waiting for the Usher discussion. Usher.
You know, I actually took something on Juwan Jennings for I don't want to say I like Juwan Jennings overs, but I certainly – well, I think I did. I haven't bet many of them yet. Clearly, I have like two bets on Juwan Jennings at this point, but I think it was first reception or longest reception or something like that. But Juwan Jennings is someone that stands to benefit from an injury rather than be hurt by an injury. Not to himself, but
right,
it's much more likely if Debo gets hurt, if Ayuk gets hurt, he's going to see more playing time. And so I think – I don't know if that – clearly that's – it's not likely that one of those guys gets hurt. But you have to consider that possibility. And so when I sort of run these simulations, I actually do factor it. Like I have a thing that says, what's the probability that one of these guys gets injured? What's his projection if that happens? And so, you know, if I simulate an injury happening midway through the game, you know, Juwan Jennings' projection for the second half at that point is going to go up.
I think this is just for anybody listening. This is so fascinating because it shows the different ways that you think of things, not just what you just described about Juwan Jennings with an injury simulation to someone else, but also what you described before about how these both teams are used to being ahead in games. Obviously, one will not be here. And so if you're, again, getting back to the if Rufus is your North Star to emulate, these are all – how many years did it take you to – happen upon all of these different things? You didn't come out of the womb thinking all these things, right? Like, how many years?
The injury stuff is more recent, I think, trying to quantify that.
I see. Okay.
I think it matters more now with all the alternate type props available now and outside of Nevada especially. You know, they offer all these tail event props, and I think those, I think that's where the injury stuff really does matter.
So interesting. Okay. So how are you deploying it?
Because I bet it's attempts for either guy, the injury rate on an in-game, the injury rate goes up substantially.
If what
just
happens?
Just so you know.
If what happens?
If let's say I take a quarterback over attempts, him getting injured happens way more often than he would if I didn't have the bet. Somehow somebody tells them, they wire it down to the sideline. They go, Stafford, get him out of the game. He's going to go over.
Todd, will you tell me who you bet over on, just so I can
I
got to put that in my model.
You know what the real thing to know from Todd is? Whatever WNBA bet he makes, he is like a documented 0-58 run right now currently.
I was doing really well in WNBA early last year, and so I got like cocky and I thought, "Oh, well, I have this figured out." And then I just got those ladies just took me to the cleaners.
And he's really sympathetic to them when they do. Oof. Like he handles it very well.
I never say any misogynistic terms.
He handles it really
well. I take it in stride.
Yeah.
I'm very, very calm about it. I don't yell and scream. It's very nice.
Anything else where I love it hearing all this.
I haven't really.
All right. We can get to Usher.
Mahomes under 4.5 rushes. Even money or better.
Okay.
I took. He's not like that's. If you think the Chiefs are going to win the game, though, that's correlated with the Chiefs losing the game a little bit, because quarterback kneel downs count as rushing attempts. That's the thing.
Right. That's the tricky one.
And if the kneel downs come, they come in spurts. So, sorry.
Yes, they do. They come in
spurts. But the typical kneel down. But Rufus, the typical kneel down is only a -3, not a minus.
No, it's a -1 normally. But this is a rushing attempt prop.
No, but I'm asking you, in a typical kneel down, isn't it 3 kneel downs for -1, -1, -1?
Yeah, but you might have 2 kneel downs, though, if, like, you know, you get the first down and there's 1:05 left.
Right. And, but I'm saying, I see what you're saying. Okay,
so it could, you don't know how many. Yeah, it's not always exactly 3.
Right. The reason that happened with the Chiefs that one year is because there was a little bit more time left. And so he was trying to kill out the time.
Yep.
And that's why he was running backward, which was such a weird scenario.
Was that
I bet you
that
won't happen.
Was that the Niners Super Bowl?
It was. No, that was rare. Yep. That's rare.
Yeah,
it makes more sense than actually running a play into the line and risking a fumble.
I remember last night watching, like, one of them was like 7 yards, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, and he just held the ball.
Yeah.
But like, I think it made sense for the Chiefs to do that rather than risk a fumble. Like,
yeah. All right. It was in that weird
down,
zone
I think he
where
threw
they
it in the end zone.
Yeah.
I think it was kneel, and then there was fourth down. There was still some time on the clock, so he just threw it up for grabs.
I had forgotten.
By the way,
but near the end zone.
Do you all remember that Super Bowl when Tom Brady had the safety on the intentional grounding when he threw the ball 50 yards downfield, down the middle of the field for the first score?
That
was the Giants, 2012 Super Bowl, something like that?
Yep.
Yeah. Have you ever seen an intentional grounding on a throw down the middle like that before?
There was a few weird ones this year where Gino had one where – It wasn't an intentional grounding. It was just he misread. Like him and the wide receiver had a miscommunication. So Gino ends up throwing it to nowhere when he just thought the wide receiver was going to break, and they called an intentional grounding on him.
Right, they started doing that more this year.
Yeah.
Aaron Schatz calls it accidental grounding.
Sure. I mean, how do you read somebody's intentions?
That's exactly right.
Well, I mean, but I'll tell you, it's like the official score for NBA on assists, right? Or like.
Yeah. Very subjective.
Very subjective. That's
all right.
I don't know if intentional is in the definition. I just think it's if you're under pressure and you throw it where no receiver's in the area, and then they throw the flag. I don't know if intention's factored into it.
Well, why is it called that?
I wonder. I'm gonna open up the rule book here.
Why is it called?
Is it called intentional grounding?
Or are we just made it up?
Yeah. I mean, it is technically called intentional grounding.
On the yes, no, whether or not this is a psyop for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl and then have a Travis Kelce and what's her name get married at halftime and tell and say that Biden, you should vote for Biden.
I mean,
because the yes on that is +160. There's a lot of value for psyop.
I mean, Todd, it either happens or it doesn't. So it's got to be 50-50.
Yeah.
I mean, but what have you seen in previous games? How many psyops have you seen in previous NFL games? That's what I'm saying. Okay.
You know, I've either seen them or I haven't. That's all I can tell you.
All right, so we have to do this before we leave because we've had a bit of a cottage industry on this podcast nailing halftimes. Whether it was Bruno Mars back in the day with the Pompadour, whether it was Katy Perry's first song, you name it. Usher. Going to do the halftime show, and a lot of speculation as to what the first song is going to be. I've talked about it on a numbers game, and I thought because he said, this is going to be a real R&B thing. By the way, did they take it down, Will, just now, as we were doing this podcast?
Who's that? The place that offers $10 limits.
Yeah. I think they took it down.
I don't think it's a real market.
I bet Usher Hava Nagila, first song.
Hava Nagila will not be the first song. Anyway, as we're doing this podcast, I don't see it anymore. And earlier on the radio side, they had locked out one option, which is real great bookmaker conduct, isn't it, when they lock out one option and then just take free money on everything else. What we have figured out, so usually we do this by set lists, and Usher starts all of his concerts with this song called My Way. If you're an Usher fan or an R&B fan, you're familiar with Usher's My Way. It's not exactly a typical song that one would start their halftime show with. In his case, you'd probably start it with more of a banger, like OMG or Yeah, for those, again, who know Usher and R&B. Probably not the EDM stuff, but probably one of those two. But it looks like it is actually going to, if you're reading the tea leaves on this stuff, Caught Up was the favorite, but My Way got locked out. They put it up for a little while longer with My Way at even money. And now as we're doing this podcast, Will, I don't see it at all anymore.
Where is this, Gilly?
At a little offshore place called Wager on the Internet.
Oh.
Where they take $10 max bet.
Yeah, where it's like a $10 max bet anyway. So anyway, people want to know.
I like to do in-game on Usher because then you can get a feel for like which song he's going to do based on how he's dancing, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can figure it out.
What's great is that Juszczyk will run across the stage while he's performing. He's going to gain so many yards. Okay. So we don't really have any Usher intel other than I think it's probably My Way, right? If we're reading the tea.
I think of the Brian Windhorst where he's got the two fingers pouring up. Why would they do that? Why would they exit out? Why would they do that?
Why would they do that? Yeah. Okay. Rufus, always interesting, man.
Always interesting, I think. I agree. I concur.
And what's most notable is that I know you have so much evidence to support your props that whether they win or lose, I get it, right? Like, I can't push back on what you're doing because I know you have it, like, absolutely keenly researched by the numbers, and so that's unassailable.
Well, not as much this year as previous years, it feels like. I'm a little behind.
You'll get there.
I'll get there. Eventually I'll get there.
Yeah.
Gilly, remember, he's 90-10 to the under. So what's the big headline from this whole thing?
Yeah.
You don't even have to have all the modeling. Just spray at the unders and you'll probably win, you know, 60% of Rufus wins.
I mean, I'll say this though. Prop prices are it's certainly much more efficient now than it used to be.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you could just basically blindly spray the unders.
And you would bet early. You would go to the Westgate. You'd wait in line. You'd make your max bets. You'd go to the back of the line. You'd bet
again.
And you'd do that for however long it took.
Till they closed up shop.
And now it's wait and then bet.
I mean, but there's also some strategy there, too, because you knew other places copied. So.
Ah, yes. Gotcha.
Plus, you were trying to bet under, so you were probably waiting till the end anyways because you wanted them to get all bid up, right?
Well, we were betting stuff where there was... It was pretty mispriced, typically.
Yeah. In those days, it wasn't an underfest, yeah.
Like, you know, when you can bet, I've said this, I feel like, way too many times, but when you can bet no roughing the passer at -115, like, I think everybody knows you don't need a good model for that.
Imagine that was the price? No roughing the passer was -115.
That's what the win opened every single year.
They kept doing it.
They clearly didn't take notes.
4 years ago, I got
clearly they didn't take notes
for +150.
What'd you say, Todd?
I said 4 years ago, I got Juszczyk over a half yard +450.
Yeah, that joke has gotten stale.
Okay. You don't know about Juszczyk?
I think I killed it with the running across the stage thing. Okay. Rufus, Unabated, give the elevator speech for Unabated.
Unabated is an odd screen that provide, and well, it's an odd screen, but it's so much more than an odd screen, girl. It's also... We also provide educational content. Captain Jack does a lot of great stuff there and
the
community, a Discord. But I would say the primary thing is an odd screen that has a lot of bells and whistles that allows you to trade better. I use it literally every single day when I'm looking at college basketball stuff.
For what primarily?
For what? I want to know what the best price is out there. If I like a team, like, for example, Iowa State, I think I had a money line bet on them yesterday. I made the price like +2 -108 and And I wanted to know what the money line conversion was to that, and it turns out it's plus 113, and I was able to get a plus 118. Not a big edge, but
still,
you know, still. Whereas I wouldn't have had an edge on the side. So it allows you to, in essence, compare different markets. And yeah, there's trading tools that really enable you to get the best price. And I find value in it personally, Gil. Like, this is all stuff that I had kind of built stuff like this myself before for betting, and so these tools are useful. We're not giving picks or anything like that.
Right.
What we're doing is saying, like, giving you tools to get the most out of your betting and your handicap.
As proud
show the in-game lines.
Yeah, we have an in-game tool actually. Did you know that, Todd? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Oh, we do. Yeah, you can literally input game state and stuff like that during the game, and it'll give you the alternate line pricing, so you can see like, oh, how much is this half point worth for a college basketball or an NFL game.
Oh, that's interesting. But it won't show you what the line is from different places while the game's going.
Oh, yeah. It'll do that, too.
Oh, wow. That's
an odd
cool
screen.
Todd, yeah, wishing him his board. As proud of that as you are of anything you've ever done, unabated?
Definitely.
What's he going to say? Of course. No, he is. And Captain Jack is the commissioner of sports betting. That is the title I have bestowed upon him, and I really think he does a great job. By the way, you're part of the Captain Jack big super stream Saturday night or whatever it is that he does annually?
I don't know. I'm not sure I've been invited yet.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. My audio will perennially suck, so I'm looking forward to that. Guys, great season of the Megapod. I cannot thank you enough. Todd, for his innumerable interruptions. It's part of your charm. We love you still.
October 19th,
the great Todd Wishnev from his mom's Cork Attic in Pittsburgh, PA. Thank you, Toddy. Now you say you're welcome.
Gilly.
Thank you. Oh, God damn it. And then Will Hill, everybody. First year on the Megapod. Let's do another one next year. And by the way, next time I talk to you guys will be for the March Madness Pod. Rufus, thank you. Thank you, sir. As always, a pleasure.
Hey, thank you.
We'll try to get you onto Media Row if we can so you can meet people.
Yeah.
The great Rufus Peabody. At Rufus Peabody on Twitter, not only with Unabated, Massey Peabody, and of course the Bet the Process podcast, which he does with Jeff Ma, Tiburon's Jeff Ma.
Yeah.
You want to promote your notebook again?
No, it's okay.
Oh, okay. All right.
There's not a lot to promote.
Hey-o. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for another spectacular year of the Megapod. Next podcast is probably going to be for Indian Wells, tennis's quote-unquote fifth major. I'll do it with Drew Densick. Thank you for listening. Good luck with all your bets. Super Bowl 58.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.